Wonderful to see you today in chapel, and trust you have a great day and a very pleasant weekend as you meet with other Christians to worship the Lord in local church ministries. We're privileged today to have as our chapel speaker Dr. Martin Huckins. His ministry has been marked by faithful service to the Lord and to his local community. He earned a THM and a Doctor of Ministry degree from Dallas Seminary, and for about 27 years he served as an associate to Dr. Tony Evans at Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship. He now serves as the president of Southern Bible Institute here in Dallas, and for several years he's also been an adjunct professor at Dallas Baptist University and also here at Dallas Seminary. And just recently he released a book that he has written entitled The Associate Pastor. And if you're interested and would like more information from someone who has been there for a number of years on the role of the associate pastor, we would like to encourage you to find that in the bookstore and take full advantage of it. He's married to his best friend Shirley, who is a trainer with the Dallas Independent School District, and they are the parents of Martin Jr. and Melissa. We're delighted to have Dr. Huckins here today, and I want you to join me in welcoming him to our chapel.
All right, you can stop clapping now. We got to get on with the business. To tell a black preacher that he only got 15 or 20 minutes, I don't need y'all to clap my time away. So let's get on with the action here. I just want to give thanks to God for all the things that he's done and this institution and what its effect has had on me. Let me tell you what. I came here as a person coming from a little place called Jericho, New Jersey. See, I was spiritual in the beginning. Joshua fit the battle there, and he didn't tear down our walls. I came out and got down here. And now I feel like this is a unique place to be up front to talk to y'all and finally tell this faculty off for all the hard work they caused me over those 4, 5, 8 years. Boy, I love you, but I love you with, I don't know what I need to say, but I do love you, and I remember you all love you. I just want to let you know that the things that we've been doing has been great. I've enjoyed my time over there with Tony Evans. Let me tell you what I'm really known for. I'm really known for the fact that I was assistant pastor over there 29 years with Dr. Evans, just quit last year in July. And he's been preaching all my sermons all these years. And getting away with it, too. He doesn't even put an asterisk beside it or anything. He's preaching my sermons. They've been my sermons all along. I told him that that's why I was there, to give him sermons. And he's been doing it. I've appreciated my work with that. But now I'm at Southern Bible Institute as a president following Dr. Gordon Mumford. And let me tell you something, and let me do this quick. Let me do this real quick. Because Southern Bible Institute has a direct connection into Dallas Theological Seminary. Let me tell you where. In 1927, when Lee Sperry Schaefer was put on his heart to start, of course, it's Dallas Theological Seminary as we know it now. In 1927, Edmund Ironside started Southern Bible Institute. On record, in the library here at this school, is a conversation between Ironside and Lee Sperry Schaefer about the school that they had started. So the histories is tied in together. That isn't all. I started to do it, but I said, no, I wouldn't do it. I got pictures of young men teaching over there in the early years. Dr. Howard Hendricks. I got a picture of you looking so good. I said, that's not the same professor I know. Boy, I mean, looking good, young, 30 maybe or less. And he's teaching over there at Southern Bible Institute. And then we have numerous amount of other professors. Many of you have come over and spent the time just teaching the word of God over there. I'm going to take that legacy. I'm going to take that history. I'm going to take that heritage. And I'm going to try to join it back together. So that many of you who are teachers here, get ready, Mike Lawson, get ready. He knew I was going to call his name. Get ready, because I'm going to use your skills and ability over there, because I want to build up a citadel of hope where we can have good teaching and good ministry coming from students that want to learn bad the Word of God. I'm not going to ask you for a handout either. What I'm going to ask you for instead is an investment. I went to my stockbroker the other day, and since I retired, I put my money away, and he was giving me information about my stock, $23.50. Don't worry about it. And he said, your stock is on the rise. He said, but let me tell you what I'm good at. He said, there is 32 stocks that I've been dealing with over the last 30 years that I've got 58% out of. When he said he got that 58%, you know my eyes went up in the air. My $23 is going to get a little bit more. I can get it up to 24 in Aerie. So with his 58% that he's been getting on his stock, it's been rising ever since. And he told me, I can take your money and I want to handle it in order that we can make your stock rise. That's what I want you to do with Southern Bible Institute. Make our stock rise. We want you to invest in us and look on us as an investment, that we are good stock, and we want you to invest your time, your energy, your money. We need the professors to come over and talk to us. We need many of you students to come over and teach the Word of God. They say that our model is holding fast the Word of God. It is important that you understand that you have a linkage to us and that you can help us to develop that we want to do, changing this world for the cause of Christ. Let me tell you, Oak Cliff will not be the same because God has let me arrive there, and I believe he's got a message through me, and I'm going to preach it, and I'm going to teach it, and I want cause for change to happen as a result of our school going in a new direction. So I pray, God, that you will pray for us that will happen. Let me just get rid of the commercials, too. This is my book. It's called Second Chair, But Not Second Best. When I did my thesis here for my doctoral thesis, I came to a conclusion that many times we prepare people to be pastors, and it's easy to prepare people to be pastors, but a lot of us land as associates and assistants. How do we act? How do we respond when we are associates and assistants? That's the issue. The issue is, can we still believe that God's got a program for our life that may not take us to the pastorate, but may leave us as associates and assistants and working with other organizations? You see, I believe that there's a calling for the associate and assistant just like it is a calling for what it is to be a pastor. And that sometimes we've made a mistake to mix the two up. That some people believe they should have been pastor when they really should have been on somebody else's staff. And as a result of that, you have the problem now of a person disjointed and in the wrong place. Not because he's a pastor, but because God's called him to something else. Watch your calling and be careful about your calling that God is calling. And especially to you who are fourth-year students who got to make decisions where they think the associate is something less than the best. It is not. It is a great calling, and God is calling you to it, to wherever he's leading you, whether pastor or associate or assistant, to do your best because it is a calling. Now, and I got through with all the good gracious of me. Used up all of my time, didn't I? That's all right. I'm not going to let y'all get away from me. We got an hour and a half in here yet, right? That's not for fun. You're not supposed to laugh. We're supposed to actually have that. What I want to do is take you to a passage that you know well, and then since you know it so well, we won't have to go over it a lot. But I want to take you to Genesis chapter 22, and we all know that passage well. It's just that I'm going to put my own twist on it. Because during this time of year, what it reminds me of is what happens in a school, because I remember these days so well. What you get is you get down to the end of semester, and then you have tests. They're not snap quizzes either. They're what you call the final exam. And when you get to the final exam, you go through all of the sweat that it takes to study for, prepare for, and get you to the point where the final exam to you sometimes can cause you to stay up at night. Brother Johnson, you did that to me a couple times. I won't tell on you, though. Make you stay up in the middle of the night, drink all kind of coffee, and you're jittery because you're so afraid of passing that final test. But I want to share with you this morning is that I want to take you through a test that Abraham went through. And I want to see in here, can you pass it? And don't feel bad. I know a man coming in here preaching to you about testing on the final time. That's not the best subject, but it is. Because I want to see if you can pass not only the test that we have for school, but can we pass the test of life? And Abraham is not in a final test that he's worried about getting a grade for. The only grader is God himself. And he wants to know whether he can pass his test. Now, let me tell you what was happening with Abraham during this time. He's a man kind of relaxing. I kind of almost saw him like myself. I wanted to retire at the end of the time that I finished Oak Cliff. I felt 29 years was enough. And, you know, I know we have the theory, and many of us believe that there is no such thing as retirement for God. He just take you. And certainly, Brother Hendricks is that boy. Can you imagine a man that's gone through as much as he is, and he just gets up and talks about his next appointment? Man, I'm not like you, by the way. I mean, if you had that much happen to me, it's happened to you, I've been quit a long time ago, probably. Because we don't know how we can handle things until we actually get there. But Abraham, instead of going to his retirement porch and get on his rocking chair and rock his life away, God says, and he says it in verse 1 of 22, and I'm reading from the New American Standard, and then I came back and after these things, after he had sat down for retirement, after he makes a turmeric tree, and he sits down, it says, God tested Abraham. Now, I know you heard this 100 times. And so I won't tell you probably anything new, but I want to share it with my vision of it. Let me help you by doing it in a series of questions that I want to ask you. And you tell me whether you can pass your own test. Because more than a test of school, the test of life is going to really tell how you pass or how you will not pass. Let me tell you what I mean. First question I want to ask you is this. Is can God... Listen to this. Can God be given the freedom by you at any time to be tested? That's the first test, because he's calling Abraham. Abraham just responds, here I am. But will you give God the privilege anytime in your life, anytime that you want, that God can test you, and not only that he can test you, but you give him the freedom to do so? Now, I'll tell you a little secret, though. God don't need our freedom. You know, I like... There was an old songwriter, James Cleveland, and he wrote the song. He said, listen, he's God all by himself, and he doesn't need anybody else. What he's saying is that he doesn't need you to have permission to test him, but he would like to know that any time that he was ready to test, that you were ready to be tested. Isn't that nice? That you would say, Lord, here am I, just like Abram did, here am I. So are you ready to take the exam? The other thing that he wants to know is that when he does give you the exam, that you're not only ready to take it, but you're ready to pass it, and you're ready to go through this test until God says it's over, not when you say it's over. So what he wants to have the freedom with you is to be able to say that he can test you any time. One writer put it this way. He said, if God is a shepherd and I am the sheep, that... He has the perfect right to shear me. And I don't have the right to bleat. Isn't that something? He's got the perfect right to test me anytime he wants. And I don't need to make any noise. I don't need to bleat about it. God, can he test you anytime? And I want to keep moving so we find out what it is that God's going to do with Abraham. And then not only does he want the right to test you, but look at test two. I like it what's happening here. He says, Abraham, he said, here am I. And he said, take your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there to be a burnt offering as one of the mountains to which I said. And then look at the next verse, verse 3. So Abraham rose early. Stop on that a minute. If I had a test of taking my son, my only son, to go somewhere on the mountain to be sacrificed, I would have slept over. I would have took time and ate a long breakfast. I would have questioned God that you know what you're doing. You told me on one end that you have given me a son that's going to be a son that's going to be my inheritance. And now you're taking him from me. I want to know what you're doing. Sound like God's going off his rocker, doesn't it? Gave me a son. By the way, he gave him a son at 100 years old. Anybody in here got any children at 100? I don't think so. And I don't think any, I don't know. Well, I won't say. Let me leave that alone right where it is. But it says instead that Abraham responds by getting up early in the morning. And he responds immediately. So the second test is, will you respond to him immediately with obedience? Not just obedience, but immediate obedience. In other words, I don't know what his night was like. I don't know if he quivered and tossed and turned. I don't know if he had cold sweats about things. I don't know what he did. I don't know as a father what he thought about that his only son was going to be missing. But whatever he did in the night, he didn't let it stop him from what was going to happen that day. He got up early in the morning. Can you, in fact, not only take the test that he's going to give you and say, you can test me, but will I be obedient to follow it immediately? Some of you as students, some of you as fourth-year students, some of you as first-year students, you're going to have to answer the question is, will I follow what God tells me to do, or will I take my own time to get there? And sometime in this day and time where we are now, most of us want to take our time, think it through, and we get spiritual about it. We want to pray about it. Not that you shouldn't pray, but when God gives you a clear example that he's calling you, go. And pray in the midst of going. He didn't ask him to pray about it. He said, go. And in the midst of his going, he leaves early in the morning. Personal experience when I was coming here to seminary, the same thing happened to me. I had lived in Jericho for the longest time, and I thought that's where I'd live and die. I was there. I enjoyed my church. I had a great little church. Reverend Willis was my pastor. He knew how to hoop. He knew hoopaletics well. And he could get down and say, a charge to keep I have. And I loved it. I got down here and they changed it to homiletics. Messed me up. I don't know about you. But anyhow, when I was coming down, I sensed that God had told me to go to seminary, and not only go to seminary, but go to seminary at Dallas. I had people to tell me all the time, you should go to PCB, you should go over here to this school, you should go to that school, but God clearly had told me to go to Dallas. I had to get up and grab my family and go before I let all the soothsayers stop me. Because I believe that there's a lot of blessings missed because when God tells us to do something, we don't act on it immediately. We want to use prayer as an excuse to delay. And we're not talking about praying about something that God makes clear to us. We're talking about doing it without a question, getting up early in the morning and preparing for it. So then we find that two things is happening in this test. One, can God have the freedom to test me? Two, can I respond so I do what I'm going to do quickly and immediately? But number three, I want you to see something else. I don't have time to read through all the text. But in verse 4, this one gets me. Look at verse 4 with me as I read from the New American Standard. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Did you catch it? On the third day, let me go back. Nobody seemed to be with me yet. On the third day, what I'm saying about the third day is, Lord, if you're going to test me, Lord, if you're going to do something with my life, you need to do it quick before I change my mind. You get my drift? On the third day, not only are you going to test me, not only are you going to demand of me an immediate response, but now I got to walk the way I got to go, and it's going to take me 3 days. I'm not going. That's what most of us say, isn't it? I'm not going, well, Lord, that's too far a walk now. I would have went, but that's walking too far. Lord, I would have accepted that ministry, but it's too far away from my mom and my dad. I would have accepted that chance, but that chance was too much of an opportunity for me not to be myself. And God, I'm more concerned about where I'm going than what you're doing with my life. On the third day, Abraham understood that not only must he do it, but he must carry it through a 100%, all the way through. Now listen to this. First year student, you come in with that initial enthusiasm. Oh, you can't be doing it. This is the greatest institution in the world, especially when we attend in Prof. Hendricks' class, when we have Bible study methods. Oh, I know how to do the whole Bible. I don't need to go any further than this. Bible study methods is as far as I need to go. Now I finally learn that the book is open to me. First year student, all that enthusiasm and excitement. You've got to learn how to hang in there to get the quality of character to make it for 4 years. And then you got on the other end, the fourth year student, they can't wait to go, isn't it? They can't wait to get out of here and just say, huh, look, I'm ready to go. But God says, wait, I didn't give you an assignment yet. The alumni office haven't come through for you. We don't know what church you're going to. We don't know if you're going to be a Christian education pastor. We don't know if you're going to be a pastor at all. And you're saying, God, I came through all of these 4 years, and you had 4 years to get it together for me, and you didn't have a ministry waiting for me as soon as I got out. You don't know who I am. I'm a graduate from Dallas Theological Seminary. You don't know me. But God says you had to pass the test of time. And, oh, boy, I got to move on. See, I'm going to have a second part to this series, so I'll be back again next week. Is that all right, Brother Mike? All right, I knew you'd like that. Anyhow, the Bible tells us, and my favorite verse is Philippians 1:6, that who began a good work in you must complete that work too. It's not how you begin, it's how you finish. God is concerned that you finish and finish well. Let me tell you, I'm going to run through the next two quick because I got to get to my last one. 4 and 5 I had for you. I just mentioned to it. When the trials begin to intensify, instead of going away, the trial intensifies. You have financial problem, and it intensifies. Not only that, but the school forgot to send you your check. The people that you work with didn't give you the money that week. It intensifies. And when you intensify, how do you stand? How can you stand it when the trials of yours begin to intensify? And then 5, let me share this one with you. Isaac finally speaks up in verse 7. I like this. Isaac says, and he spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father, and he said, here I am, my son, and he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb? Isaac isn't dumb, is he? Isaac said, look, I know what sacrifice is all about. I'm old enough to know what it's about. I also understand you don't have no lamb. And let's get this straight. I know about the Canaanite religion, because they take their oldest son up to have them killed on the mountaintop. I know about that. Now, whoa, 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 whoa. Papa, have you slipped the disc here? Have you gone back to some kind of religion that we don't know about anymore? And he says, what happened here? You know, the question is there, what happens when our children ask questions? Can we still look them in the face with integrity and say to them, I'm trusting God for the answer? But that's what Abraham did. Abraham said, I don't know, but they're going to provide us with a lamb. And I'm, boy, if I was Isaac at that time, I said, you better show me one before we get up this hill. See, I'm exegeting for the word. You know, this is what you call, you know. you better show something. Get a cat, dog, anything. Something. He ain't killing me. If you want to go off, I'm not going off with you. You go off by yourself. But anyhow, but the last test is really the one I want to get to. Listen to this. Then they came to the place where God, verse 9, told them, and Abraham built the altar. But look at 10. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife and to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. Now, I got my own version of this. I'm going to have to go out of the text to find this. Ooh, look at him. Look, Dr. Johnson went off on me. You know, he ain't going out no text. I know. I know Bible study methods. Don't worry. I got you in check. Let me tell you what I think happened. That God, on one end, requires him to get up there and put Isaac on the altar and take everything and tie him down. About this time, Isaac thinking, it's gone. I'm dead. I'm a dead son. It ain't nothing I can do. He done tied me down now. If I was going to run, I can't run now. But Abraham draws the knife to him. Listen to this. And he probably starts down enough to let him know that he means business, and God sends his angel to stop him. Now, let me tell you what I think happened. Can I use my sanctified imagination? Thanks. I knew you'd let me. In the imagination of what was happening, it says in verse 10, it says, then Abraham raised up his eyes, and he looked, and behold, there was a ram. Let me tell you what happened. Let me give you my sanctified imagination. When Abraham was getting ready to respond, God was saying, I want to know, can I take from you your dearest and nearest possession and you not quiver about it? When Abraham was beginning to do it and he pulled the knife, he had already killed Isaac. In fact, he was there because when you pull a knife, nobody can stop the thrust of your arm coming down but the angel of God. But listen to this. It says, then Abraham saw the ram. I got a theory. We will not see in our trials what God will provide until we pull the knife on the dearest thing in our life. For you fourth-year students, you got to pull the knife that I've got to have a ministry and trust God. You got to pull the knife that I can pass my test. You got to pull the knife on it and trust God to be able to accomplish it in your life. But let me tell you another theory I got. That God didn't provide the answer until, listen, Abraham was going up one side of the mountain with Isaac. I hold that the ram was making the same step to Isaac on the side, on the other side. The ram was moving up as Abraham was moving up. So when they get to the top of the thicket, it's only after he pulls a knife that he's able to see the ram. Students, faculty, we got to give up the thing that we think that we want the most in order for us to have God to know that we completely trust him. Whatever you're holding on to, you need to let it go. Whatever you're trying to say, Lord, I want to keep back for myself, that's what he wants. He want to know, in the test of life, can he get all of you, not some of you, and that he has you for the rest of life. That's the final exam of life. Can you at any time be tested? But let me tell you what the key to this thing is. God not only gives it the test, he gave the provisions too. So God was in the process the whole way through.